This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. This is Her Vantage, and Her Vantage is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. And joining me in the studio today is Majida Hashim,
who's Hi.
Joined the BFM team, the enterprise team. But also more importantly, she's also got a social enterprise of her own. And today's focus, I just want to talk about social enterprises around the world. So we start with homegrown first. She's got 71.
Yep.
Tell us about 71.
So while I'm here, 71 runs in the background. We are a Malaysians for Malaysians social enterprise, and we make handcrafted tea out of locally sourced Malaysian ingredients. The best part about our tea, besides that it is completely chemical-free, it's the only completely chemical-free locally sourced tea right now, as far as we know in Malaysia. It's also handmade by people who are differently able, people mm-hmm. with special needs.
Okay, so when you say differently able, you've got a couple of families with you.
Yeah, we call them families because the people that we work with, most of them are on the autism spectrum, and they're not high functioning. So they're always accompanied by a parent, and it's usually the mom, because these guys can't drive, they can't do a lot of things on their own. They can do a lot of things, but there are some things that they can't do. So they're accompanied by their moms, which means that these families are all single income families with only the father. If he's in the picture, he's the one working. So the mom has had to give up work and kind of have to give up everything for the child. So when we hire these guys with autism, we hire their moms as well. So there's a replacement income that we also provide for the moms.
So you're hiring, hence you're hiring the families.
Yeah, we call them families.
And you've been doing this for about over a year?
Just over a year. We just celebrated our company birthday in July.
What made you do this, Majida?
I have been working in corporate for about over 12 years already. So I've worked in GLCs, MNCs, I've worked overseas, and I've always worked in the area of sustainability. And I've always had fingers in, because of sustainability, in the CSR world. So there are a lot of social issues that's happening in Malaysia. Among some of the ones that are most neglected are people with special needs, and especially those who are also in the low income strata. So I wanted to start a social enterprise that directly addressed this category of this neglected sector of people. Corporate companies are already doing a lot. They are really committed, and I know a lot of them really care genuinely about helping people. But I wanted a company whose core business is to help them and at the same time sustain itself and not just do fundraising or CSR right. activities.
And it's really great that you've, you know, joined us as well. You know, you bring with you, you know, some business experience, some corporate experience, and of course the whole idea of social enterprise as well. As you know, I went to Los Angeles recently to attend the Venture Finalists 2017 and competition for social enterprises across the globe. And 29 countries participate in that. So I wanted to feature the women who are running these social enterprises, right? So on our show today, we'll cover two interviews from Venture Finalists, Words with Heart, which is from Australia, and Wakami from Guatemala, and another social enterprise, Kalabu, from Philippines, but that's the later part. But so a little bit about Wakami. It is a platform that sheds light to communities in Guatemala that face with domestic violence, low education, poverty, you name it, by giving them the opportunity to connect the world and sell their handmade fashion accessories. And Guatemala was a top five finalist for last year's the Venture.
Maria Pacheco. My business is Wakami, based in Guatemala. We'd say that our business transforms lives. What we really do is link rural communities in Guatemala to the global market and create handmade fashion accessories that are beautiful and make the people that wear them beautiful, but transform the lives of the people that produce them, makes their lives beautiful too. So we started with bracelets, with necklaces. Now we're starting to do some clothes, and now we're starting to do Wakami travelers to the villages, because people want to see the, you know, the impact. They want to meet the people making the bracelets. So now we're starting to be a tourism agency.
Well, I listened to this interview that you have, and it was really interesting to see that when you help women, you also, and you give sources of income to women, you don't only help her and her self-confidence, but you also, her, whatever she earns is channeled toward her children and their schooling and their education. So it's like what they say, you help a woman, you help the entire community.
And a little bit about the other one, which is Lauren Shuttleworth from Words with Heart. It's a two-year-old business that also focuses on eco-stationery and print company and aspired to fund children's education. And this idea sparked when Lauren volunteered in Kenya and saw families struggle to send children to school, and she wanted to make a difference. So Words with Heart collaborate with big companies in Australia, like banks and engineering firms, for all to do all their business printings.
So my business is an eco stationery and print company that funds education projects for women and girls in the developing world.
And how did they start the business?
It was being touched by the reality of Guatemalan women, but then also being touched by a beautiful vision of what's possible when as human beings we work together. And the business is at the heart of that.
I was actually volunteering overseas in Kenya a few years ago, and I saw firsthand how hard it was for girls in my class. I was volunteering at a school to stay in school because their families couldn't pay the ongoing cost of school fees. So I wanted to do something about that coming back to Australia.
We also discussed the scale of impact, how long has the business been around, and some of the struggles.
With Wakami, it's really 500 women, so say 5-6 people, it's 3,000 people. And we measure like how their lives changes. So we know that Wakami women, for example, 9 out of 10 Wakami children go to school in a country where only 4 out of 10 from 6 to 18, especially the girls. We have a country where 50% of children have chronic malnutrition. The Wakami children, 60% are improving, not totally out of malnutrition. They're improving. And then we do empowerment like service on women, and they say, whereas before they didn't have a voice and they felt like they weren't educated to do anything. Now they're just saying, you know, our first dream came true and now we're dreaming more. So I think, you know, when you have a business that brings these kind of people into the prosperity chains, the transformation that you see is what we're passionate about. Because then even though the world is tough, it creates hope for everybody.
And Lauren Shuttleworth from Words with Heart.
So to date, we have funded over 70,000 days of education for women and girls across Cambodia, Sierra Leone, Uganda and Nepal. And we've saved tens of thousands of units of wood, water and energy through our printing. So we've had, a pretty substantial impact. We have big goals, though. We want to fund 1 million days of education by 2020.
I had to ask because, you know, you're at this place where you're meeting all these other social enterprises, whether it doesn't become a local challenge anymore, and were there any potential collaborations with other social enterprises through the venture?
I think definitely. And this year, because we're not pitching this year, we can really concentrate on listening to other people's stories. And, you know, just like meeting Leah, Layla that just spoke, and Apple's guys, and seeing everybody. I think it's really interesting to see that they face similar challenges and, you know, they have similar dreams, similar values. For me, you know, sometimes as an entrepreneur, you think, what am I doing wrong that this is so hard? And then you're in an environment where everybody is like, okay, yeah, today my feeling was I'm normal. but what I do love is that I think, you know, in Wakami we say individual dreams are strong, collective dreams are unstoppable. And the more people that share, you know, and we can collaborate, I think that's what makes a difference. So
it's been incredible. Actually, even just small things, Pernod Ricard have now become a client of ours. So we've been doing, you know, some really big print audits for them in terms of bags and packaging. So, you know, that's an incredible opportunity for us. It helps us scale. And also it adds credibility when we're talking to investors, when we're talking to other big global companies, because this competition, being one of the selected as the best social enterprise in Australia, is huge. So it certainly plays a big part in getting us noticed and you know, getting those meetings, which then turn into business. So no, it's been really valuable.
I think one of the best things that both these companies pointed out about the venture is the community that it built. That they are not the only crazy people out there trying to change the world, trying to better lives. At the same time, that they met other people and they realized that it's normal. Whatever they go through, the challenges are real, but the stories things that they can relate to as well. And so it's a community of people doing
good. It's not
crazy.
It's people with hearts, mm-hmm. you know, people with big hearts and, you know, willing to give up a lot, you know, to be able to do this. I mean, for you, what have been some of the challenges?
For myself personally, when I decided that I wanted to quit a very nice, cushy kind of corporate job, give that all up and suddenly start a small SME by myself, a lot of people are going like, that is a sign of a crazy person, right? You made so much money, you have so much experience and you're already contributing so much and you're giving it all. And convincing my family was one, but also the whole family and moving to a whole different world, doing things which are way outside my comfort zone was a challenge that I'm still overcoming. Besides that, it's the learning curve itself. I come from a more of a social arts background, and the big bad business world is something that is scary. And but like this, the ladies that we heard, I found myself to be in a community of other social entrepreneurs, and it's a community that is very helpful to each other. I can call up any of them. We don't compete per se, but we help to collaborate, and that's the best part of it, because we're all doing good. At the same time, we all face the same kind of criticism, the challenges and obstacles, and I can run to them if I'm like, oh, help, this happened to me, and they will help me. And I like belonging to a community like that.
All right. In just a moment, we'll be speaking to Marie Cabosora from Philippines, and she's is different. It's from the GK Enchanted Farm of the Philippines, and I'm Frida Liu together with Majida Hashim. We'll continue with that story in just a moment. Stay tuned to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. It's Her Vantage. Her Vantage is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm Frida Liu together with Majida Hashim, who works with us on the Enterprise team, but also has her own social enterprise called 71. So today we're giving a glory to all the women who run social enterprises. Earlier on, I spoke to the finalists from the venture in Los Angeles. We were speaking to Maria Pacheco from Wakami, Lauren Shuttleworth from Words with Heart. Now coming back to somewhere nearer to home, we have Marie Cabosora from Philippines to share with us more stories about Calaboo. So Marie is under the Gawat Kalinga Enchanted Farm, or the GK Enchanted Farm.
Wow.
And this was started by Tony Maloto, who was a special guest speaker at the Enterprise Breakaway 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I really love the idea of what they're doing. So the whole farm is integrated with different social enterprises. I visited the farm myself also personally, on a personal basis, because I just like what they were doing in March this year, and now my son is there because I want him to be able to mix with kids from different backgrounds, work on the farm, cook in the kitchen, and just sort of learn life isn't so, you know, to learn that he's blessed with the current life that he's got, right? And it's a character building for him.
I think that's a really important thing that a lot of young people need to be exposed to, because we all grew up here in the concrete jungle. And I remember when we were driving out just outside KL to places like Banting and all, and you will see a cow in the sawah padi outside, and they were going like, wow, this is so rare for us to see. So for your son to get the opportunity to live on a farm, to actually have his hands-on working on a farm, what an experience.
So far, all the pictures I've seen of him, he's still smiling. But it's only day 3 at the moment. So a little bit about Calaboo Creamery. It's a social enterprise, like I said, born out of GK Enchanted Farm. And they plan to transform lives with Carabao milk. And in Malaysia, of course, we call them Kerbau. Right?
Oh, okay. I see it.
Their mission is to uplift the lives of Carabao dairy farmers while developing the market for branded, high-value, relevant dairy products through public-private partnerships. So a country that has a Carabao, they're very dependent on imported dairy products.
Oh.
So that's the reason why she came up with this. So we'll have a listen to what Maria has to say.
I started first as a volunteer just to get my sense of bearing and to find out exactly where the farm needs me and where my skills can fit in appropriately. So after a few weeks, I had a better understanding of how it works, like understanding of why people do what they do, understanding of how of the personnel. And the personnel is actually comprised of community partners, so GK community residents, the farm management team, French interns, seed students, staff, so many groups of people coming together. So I needed to understand who was doing what the needs were, and how I could fit in, and how I could serve the cause in the best way I could. So after a few weeks, I was brought in as part of the partnerships marketing events team, because my background is advertising and marketing in the U.S. and Asia. And so I was able to offer that to the team and to the cause of the farm. And while I was in the management team, I also taught like one class to the SEED students. That's the School for Experiential and Entrepreneurial Development. So for the bright poor. So I would teach them mindfulness and meditation classes. About a year and a half into it, I decided to become my own social entrepreneur, to start now, take the full-on leadership position into a new enterprise that we felt that the farm needed and the country needed. So I became a founder of this enterprise, social enterprise called Calabu Creamery, which is, we purvey Carabao dairy products from grass-fed Carabaos, and with a focus on what's naturally healthy, nutritious, minimally processed, and to really enhance the goodness of Carabao milk.
You know, yesterday during your talk, you shared some very interesting stats about the Carabao, and of course, in Malaysia, we call them Kerbau. But it was really surprising. You know, could you relay that again?
Okay. So the dairy industry in the Philippines, for one, we import a lot of it, like 99%. We import, and most of that is actually raw materials of dried milk, which we use as ingredients for a lot of the products here. 97% of the sales in the local market go to multinational companies, and only 3% go to local farmers. And, you know, we still have a really high poverty rate in our country, almost anywhere fluctuating between 25 to 30%, and most of them are farmer families. So why are we allowing the farmers to miss out on this growth opportunity, like a really thriving industry? Like, how come they're not part of it? But for Carabao milk, and this is, I'm talking about dairy, which is, you know, produced, it's made out of milk from the common cow, like cows that are industrially raised, right? So here in the Philippines, we have our native animal, which is a Carabao, which is actually in the water buffalo family. Carabao, the milk on its own is actually a better product relative to cow milk, and that it has higher in fats, milk solids, and proteins, double the calcium and phosphorus, higher in vitamins like A, definitively, and lower at least half the cholesterol of cow milk. So already you can see, even as a raw material, this is like a higher value product, and it's naturally more nutritious. But we don't see it here in the Philippines as something of high value, because Carabaos, as animals, are draft animals. So, you know, overworked, underrated, super so docile. But if you actually see them now as dairy animals, like being able to produce high quality raw material from which you can make a lot of, not just a lot of delicious, natural, naturally healthy products, now you begin to see this animal as something of real value. Mm.
And you're looking at these products as very artisanal, like how, just to get the name out there, you're working with some of the better known chefs as well.
Yes. Yeah, it is artisanal. Let me just correct you though. It's artisanal in that it's handcrafted, yet, and really lovingly made, but we want to scale it up, right? And so to be able to get it to different parts of the Philippines and also different parts of the world. But what we're really driving at here, which makes it different from what's currently available, is we really focus on premium and minimal process. And so we work with chefs who recognize what good product is. So despite themselves, because it's such a good product, they just love to use it. So with Chef Miko Aspiras of Le Petit Soufflé, he's an innovator. So he uses our Carabao milk with some of his desserts. And he's also made panna cotta with Carabao milk, his butter cookies, lots of other things. He's even made, before us, he's made polvoron with Carabao milk powder. And then Chef Gaita Forrest, she's, I believe she was the top Asian chef top female Asian chef just last year. Mm. And she's Filipina, but she's trained in Italy. So Italians have a healthy appreciation for fresh produce, right? And of course, Italians have the mozzarella di bufala. And we have a similar cheese here, which we call now Calabu, our brand, calls it queso cariño, which is like a mix of fresh cheese and fresh mozzarella. So it's light like queso pate, which is our native cheese, and melty. When you apply heat to it, it melts like fresh mozzarella. So top chefs know quality, right? So, and because we're really driving the premium aspect of it, you know, and building the brand, it's really good that we're able to attract like people who can vouch for the quality and the goodness of our product.
Did you ever think that you end up doing this?
Never. First of all, I'm a Balikbayan, so I lived in the U.S. for most of my adult years. And as most Filipinos leaving the country, I never thought I'd come back here until it was time to retire, until I'm 80 and I could just play mahjong or golf and get massages, right? But never in a million years did I think I'd be coming back here at the prime of my life, making butter, for, you know, like I worked on big brands in when I was in New York on Pepsi, and you know, also had a chance to work on Disney and IBM, IKEA. So handling big brands, and it's really an honor and a very humbling experience to be able to bring all that experience that I have from abroad to bring it back to my home country, and use all my experience to build a brand that's Filipino but world class. So it gives me a new sense of purpose, and really now a reason why I've lived all those years away from my home country.
You know, Tito Tony Maloto, of course, you know, is the founding father of the farm. And, you know, of course, he talks about this, bringing back the Filipino pride and all that. But I'm sure it is challenging, right? Because it is changing the mindset of the people you have to work with. You know, and what has been a struggle for you in wanting to make that change, but it is a lot easier said than done.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you asked that, because it's a real struggle for sure, because you mean really well when you want to bring out the best in them. So in the U.S., living in New York City or living in fast-paced cities like Hong Kong and Singapore, you have to be super on, right? Mm. You demand excellence. You work hard. You work like 25-hour days, 8 days a week kind of thing. And it's like very task-oriented, very just high level of stress naturally, and a lot of hard work in terms of hours and in terms of energy and attention. So I was fortunate to be trained that way in one way and to demand excellence, because I'm able to demand that of myself. Mm. But here in the Philippines, it's very relationship-based. Mm. Like everything that I learned in the U.S. and the Western world really was detrimental to the practice here. I cannot demand excellence. I actually have to inspire it. Mm. Because Filipinos, at the end of the day, at our core, we cannot be bought. Our relationships are so much more important than any amount of money they could ever give them. Mm. Right? So,
yeah, and I guess, like, how then do you, you know, at the same time, yes, we understand it's about inspiring, you were saying, it's about inspiring excellence. And then at the same time, do you also have like deadlines? You know, like I know there's this goal to end poverty with 5 million by 2024. You know, so there is that little deadline that we have to work with. And you're like, can we meet it? Are we moving fast enough?
Yeah, believe me, I'm in that space. But when we set hard deadlines, I've learned not to set hard deadlines, because the only deadline I had set, and the first, was our official launch on November 11 last year. So I wrote a lot of Gantt charts with milestones and everything else, and I look at them like, oh my gosh. But we did the work. We did all the work, but at the end of the day, actually, life, nature has its own rhythm. You may do all these things, and in hindsight, yes, we did this, we did this, we did this, but at some point, other moving parts are not ready. And I realize, in hindsight, that really, the time is going to happen when it's supposed to happen. Tito Tony talks about don't get ahead of your destiny, right? But it is definitely a balance. It doesn't mean you just chill out and, you know, like wait for things to happen. But you do what you need to do without killing yourself, without killing your team members, without like stressing everybody out. Because this isn't really the life that we want to live, right? I mean, we're ending poverty, we're transforming people's lives, but it doesn't make sense, or it's not really the right spirit if everybody's stressed out.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah, deadlines are there, but also deadlines are man-made. Mm. And so you can set hard deadlines when there's like events and there's a lot of resources and energy of people from all, you know, from different sectors, many people already involved. Then you try to meet those deadlines. But the ones in between, there should be a measure of flexibility. And that's what I'm learning really, is like when to really push for it and when not to. Understanding that at the core of it all, it's relationships. Am I going to burn a bridge with this person if I push this person hard enough? They will, but then you probably won't see them ever again. And I have experienced that. And if this business is going to be sustainable, it's going to be built on loving relationships.
How will you know or measure the success of your business?
Oh, that's a good question. Really good question. Actually, right, a couple of days ago you asked me, what's the ROI? When are you going to get the return on investment? And I realized the ROI we get is every day. Every day when we see people say, thank you so much, you know, I've learned so much from you, your butter is really good, where can I get the yogurt? Those are wins already, right? Those are successes already. So when we continue to give jobs to people, when we continue to give a certain level of deep satisfaction to our consumers and people get excited about it and people say, hey, thank you for doing this, you know, this is something really good for our country. Those are our successes. The ROI will pay itself out. You know, eventually we'll be taking on impact investors, and we're not even ready for that kind of financial engagement, because we need to make sure that the people supporting us, all the way down to the investors giving their money, they need to know, they need to be complicit that we're building this Filipino dream of ending poverty through transformation. So the successes will never be only measured by financial returns, but also by the quality of life of the people we're serving and the people who also work with us.
So there you have it. You know, we've spoken to Maria Pacheco from Wakami, Lauren Shuttleworth from Words with Heart from Australia. Wakami is from Guatemala. Marie Cavasora from Calabu Creamery, based on the Philippines. And Majida Hashim from Malaysia.
I'm right here.
71. I'm Rina Liu, and you've been listening to Her Vantage from BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.